Welcome to this week's episode of Frog Fever, a Big 12 basketball podcast brought to you by KillerFrogs.com. My name is Davis Wilson. With me, as always, is my co-host, Nick Giramani. Nick, how are you? As Frog fans, but we'll get into that later. What were your thoughts on the week in the Big 12 as a whole?
Yeah, it was a pretty chalk Big 12 week. You know, there's a couple storylines that, you know, we got out of it, but a lot of games that almost had upsets. UCF almost kicked off Iowa State. OU almost got Houston, but it ended up just being like Kansas almost won at Baylor, but we can get into that. But yeah, as a Frog fan, I mean, this is as bad of a week as we've had all year. It's you want to peak at the right time, but this is not going well for us. So we'll get into that and break down what's going wrong for the Frogs.
Yeah. Well, we'll start. Oh, I should say this. We have our good friend Colin Post coming on the podcast. We talked to him early last week, just about some general topics about this year's TCU team, what he thinks about the rest of the Big 12. He's a great basketball fan, and he knows what he's talking about. So we had a good conversation with him, and we'll bring him on at the end of the episode. But I guess for now, we'll start with the Big 12 stuff. And I think the obvious one we'll start with, you know, TCU had a bad week, but Kansas also had a bad week. TCU and Kansas both went 0-2, both lost to BYU and Baylor. We'll start with Kansas. Obviously, they're hurt. They're without McCuller. What do you think? What do you think about this team? They have not looked good for a couple weeks now, and we were concerned about them last week, and those concerns were very real, it turns out.
Yeah, Kansas is interesting because that BYU game, you know, BYU going into Allen Fieldhouse is, and getting the win is huge for the like, to think that they could do that in year one of the Big 12 is crazy. Yes, McCuller was out that game. So I think at that point it was a little okay, but McCuller coming back for the Baylor game and then still losing is kind of troubling. If I'm being completely honest, though, if McCuller can stay healthy, like he came back and, you know, put up 20 with ease, and he was being the focal point of the offense, like he picked up right where he left off before the injury. So I think it just proves what we've kind of said all year, is that Kansas isn't that elite team. I think this is the most Big 12 losses in the Self era, maybe. I think they're 9-7 right now, which is crazy to say for a Kansas team. But I think as of right now, it just chalks it up to where they lie. You know, losing at Baylor is not a bad loss, and losing, you know, BYU is also a really good team. You don't want to lose at home there, but without McCullough, you kind of have a little bit of an excuse. I think they'll be fine and they'll be good. Like, I wouldn't read too into them being like crazy bad, because that, you know, getting them healthy is probably the biggest thing for them at this time. But as we've said before, they weren't as good as people thought at the start of the year. Like, their AP will finally probably drop when this podcast comes out. You know, they're being overrated by the AP the whole year, and they'll probably be right around where they should be, which is like the 10 to 20 range, I think, of, you know, they'll probably be in the 3 or 4 seed line, which is probably where they should be because their stars are that good. But yeah, it just proves to show that Kansas is going to be fine in terms of being fine to like win a game or two in the tournament, but I don't think that they'll be that top team that they've been in years past.
Yeah. It's hard to write this team off for a lot of reasons. First of all, it's Kansas. It's Bill Self. That program has been here before. Maybe not exactly here. I don't know. Like you said, I'm not sure they've ever had this many conference losses, but they have seen a lot of things. Self has seen a lot of things. And then the other reason you can't count them out is because their 1-2 punch is the best we have this in the country. So
yeah,
you can't ever say that Kansas is out or done, you know, because they are totally capable of, you know, they'll be a 2 or 3 seed, probably, maybe a 4 now, but we'll see that later. They're going to you know, maybe they're not a Final Four team, maybe they're not that good, but with the two guys that they have, it's hard to just be completely out on them because you know, in their first game back together, they combined for 40, 20 apiece. And then it's kind of the same story. You don't get much else from anyone else. So, it's the same stuff we've been saying about Kansas since Big 12
Yeah,
play
exactly.
started. I think we've been all over this, but you can't, you know, overreact to this. I agree with you because first of all, Baylor and BYU, TCU fans found out those two teams are
They're
good.
good.
They're good. Yeah. BYU going to Lawrence and doing that makes it really, really impressive, more impressive. But those were two good teams. Kansas was, you know, I think they're figuring it, they're gonna have to figure some things out, certainly, but I wouldn't write them off yet.
Yeah, I think I said it earlier in the year too when we were first finding out this Kansas team, their strengths and weaknesses and stuff. I think they're the most intriguing team in the nation just because 1 through 5 could be the best 1 through 5 there is with DeJuan, KJ, and obviously the two stars of McCullough and Dickinson. That they can go star for star with any team in the country. And it so when you take it for that, then their ceiling is like as high as it is. I mean, they were preseason AP one coming into the year, which makes them an intriguing team in March because you can see Kansas going deep and Self's obviously done it before and stuff like that. And then you could also see it collapsing like one injury, like we've seen with McCullough, and they can lose to anybody. You know, they lost to West Virginia, UCF, BYU at home, all that kind of different stuff. But yeah, so I'm super interested to see how they're gonna click come Big 12 tournament and come NCAA tournament, because if they peak at the right time, they could do it. And yeah, as we said before, you can't overreact to this. So I'm going to be super interested to see how Kansas bounces back from what they went through.
Yeah, for sure. So Kansas struggled, but we'll talk about Texas now. We have Texas next up on the list. They are one of those teams that seems to be peaking at the right time. After they went to Kansas last Saturday and got kind of smacked around, they beat Texas Tech on the road, and then they handedly beat Oklahoma State at home, which is something they need to do. And I think we need to talk about how good Texas is on the road. Like I don't know, I can't figure it out right now, but they've won a lot of big games on the road. Like that TCU game was on the road. They killed Oklahoma on the road. Now they're going into Lubbock, you know, a town that hates Texas, and they make it look pretty easy. So what do you think about Texas? We have kind of been back and forth about Texas all year long. And like I said, it seems like they're getting into a stride at the right time now.
Yeah, Texas has also been one of the most interesting teams because they have the talent to go hand in hand with everybody. And it's interesting because we recorded that call-in interview and we had, stick around for that great convo. But he had the take where he thinks Texas could be one of the biggest sleepers in the Big 12. We recorded it Monday right before the Baylor game. So that was before these two wins. So that was a great take on his part looking so far. But that win at Tech, yeah, like they've been dominant, or I don't want to say dominant, but successful on the road more than the average Big 12 team. That's a huge rivalry win, and they had it pretty soundly, and then beating Oklahoma State soundly with no real worry in either of those games is massive. And they've been kind of healthy and unhealthy, like getting to Sue back at the start of the year and then just kind of hanging around. And really, I mean, they haven't secured a tournament spot yet because they had that ro super rocky start, but yeah, as you said, they're getting hot at the right time. And when D'Souza's clicking, Asemus, Tyrese Hunter, Shedrick, Dylan Mitchell, like you can name dudes on this team that have had success in March and that can get it done because they had success last year. Obviously, Asemus has been around for forever, just killing it in the tournament. So they're definitely a scary team and one that I think a lot of people should consider being. I don't want to say Texas is a Cinderella, but in being a higher seed that could advance in the tournament, Texans' talent is going to be way better than your average 8, 9, 10 seed or whatever they're going to end up at.
Yeah. And the other thing about them is that they have experience. Like, they made a bit of a run last year. Max Asmus, everybody remembers his tournament runs with Oral Roberts. So he knows about March. He's very familiar and comfortable playing during this month. But things do get tough for them. They go to Baylor on Monday. So we're recording this Sunday. They go tomorrow. And then they host Oklahoma. And those are the two games I have left to close this year out. They're 8-8 in the conference right now. So 10-8 is on the board. 8-10 is on the board. On the table, I mean. But so what do you, I mean, how do they stack up against like Baylor? Because Baylor, we saw, is another team that seems to be peaking at the right
Yeah.
time. What do you think about? I think that's a really intriguing game. And we'll talk about Baylor in a second
For
because,
sure.
they've been really good. But what do you think about what do you think they need to do, I guess, in these last two games and then going into that Big 12 tournament? What do you think they need to do to really lock up a spot?
Yeah, this game at Baylor is going to be huge because they're both hot, as we said. If they lose that one, I still think they're fine because I think they have a little bit of a cushion right now just based on their metrics and they're 26 in KenPom. I think they're right around there on the net too, and just being around 500 in the conference, which is fine. If you split these, I think you're fine. Even if you lose early in the Big 12 tournament, you beat OU at home, and that's still a decent win, especially in a rivalry game. So I wouldn't be too concerned about like if I was a Texas fan, I would be ecstatic about where this team is headed because they're peaking at the right time, as I said, and they have the talent. So, but yeah, I'm just intrigued to watch just how good these are, because that was kind of the next conversation I wanted to have too, which leads into it perfectly, is outside of Houston, which I think everybody can agree, or most people watching the Big 12 would agree, that they're the best team, and it's pretty big of a cushion. I think even in all of college basketball, I think UConn, Purdue, and Houston are your top three teams, and there's kind of a gap between that, and Houston has solidified itself as the best team in the Big 12, having success again. But outside of them, at this point, who do you see making the biggest run in March or having the most success for any other team in the Big 12?
Yeah, that's a good question. First of all, I want to shout out Jamal Shedd, both of our Big 12 Player of the Year
Yeah, game
pick that we
winner.
made last week, hit a huge game winner. It was at Oklahoma, right?
Yeah,
Yeah,
that would have
so
been a great, because as we said, OU's kind of still fighting for the spot a little bit too. So that was almost a massive win for them, which would have kind of locked them up. But yeah, Shed broke their hearts at the end.
We know about Houston, but I think Texas does have potential to make some noise. I don't think they'll go the farthest. I think it's probably between Iowa State and Baylor. And I like
Yeah.
Iowa State a lot, but the way Baylor's playing right now makes me want to pick Baylor, and I will pick Baylor.
Yeah.
We'll get into it, but the score in that TCU game makes it look better for TCU than it was, in my opinion. That was
Yeah,
really,
for
really
sure.
horrible showing from TCU and a really impressive showing for Baylor at TCU. They kind of get their revenge after that triple overtime game. And then they go and they beat Kansas with McCollar, like we talked about, they're healthy. That Kansas team was healthy. So this Baylor team, the offense that it has is, I mean, you talk about Houston's defense. I think this is probably the premier offense in the Big 12, or one of them. And Baylor's my pick just because they have guards that can score, which I think is important. They have the star power. They have Misi, who's had a really impressive year. I just think they and Scott Drew is the best of the best. So Baylor's my pick for that team outside of Houston to go the farthest in the tournament, just because the way they're playing right now, the talent that they have, and the experience that whole program has, So that's mine. I'll go Baylor.
Yeah, no, I think that's a solid take because I believe Iowa State's been the better team this year, but Baylor's just more matchup proof, which I think is important in tournament play when you're playing such different styles of teams. Like Iowa State's defense or Iowa State's offense can just kind of disappear at times. Like they almost lost to UCF in that type of game. So I worry about them being too reliant on home court too, because we've seen Iowa State be completely different teams home and away. You know, they're still such a top tier team that has been better than Baylor for this year. But yeah, I think Baylor is right there. I bought into BYU too, because they're a similar style as Baylor, and even might even have a little bit. They're probably a little worse offense and a little better defense. But I would still probably lean Baylor there too, just because they've been farther before, you know, and have that experience. Kansas, we've said before, you can't count them out. And I think Texas, that last of that group that can kind of make that, has the ability to make that deep run. Just because those are the teams that have had success. And then, yeah, you enough to show you to be able to prove that they can make that deep run. But yeah, gun to my head, I'd probably say Baylor right now to agree with you, because they're just so hot. They have the talent and they can play such different styles than an Iowa State, being reliant on a slow pace. But it's going to be super interesting because as we said all year, I think it's Houston gap. So I don't know what to expect from the rest of the Big 12 come the tournament. You know, it's the best conference of basketball, but you don't know where these teams line up against each other because they're just going at each other every night, which makes it so exciting.
Yeah, one thing about the Baylor Iowa State difference, like Iowa State has an amazing defense outside of Houston's. I think it's the best in the country. I mean, they have the ability to shut teams down. Like they held Oklahoma to 45 points on Wednesday. And Oklahoma has, not a great offense, but a solid offense. So, the thing about that is they don't have an offense, Iowa State, and there's times where that unit disappears. And in March, and I think in the Big 12, when you have a defense and no offense, you can navigate through it. But I think in the tournament, you're going to see some different style teams where
Yeah, that you don't know.
you need shot makers, and Baylor has so many shot makers. I don't think Iowa State has as many shot makers. And Baylor can score with anyone. Like, even if their defense is not great, they're going to be able to put up points. I mean, since February 13th, I mean, not quite a month, they've scored less than 78 once. And that was against TCU, and when they scored 62. That was a weird game. But they just have that offense and the talent to score with anyone. Like, maybe it's Jacoby Walter who's making his shots. Maybe it's Ray J. Dennis who's been really unbelievable the last couple weeks. I just think they're deep, and they just I don't know, they have that ability to score. And BYU is another team. You mentioned them, they're peaking at the right time as well, and they have that really potent offense too. But I just think Baylor, I don't know, I like Baylor's shot making a little bit more, and I like what they've done. And this is that TCU game is hard to judge because they dropped into this zone that for whatever reason TCU could not figure out. It was this basic zone. It made TCU look like a high school team. I mean, it was really bad. But TCU's a good offense, and they figured out how to shut it down. And I don't think they're just going to be able to go play that zone in March, because you'll have teams that like understand how to adjust, to that. But I think it's encouraging that they did have a game where they put up 62 points and still won really comfortably.
Yeah, the development of Eve Mesi, I think he's become one of the most elite NBA prospects and players on their team, because at the start of the year, you know, the true freshman, he's such a raw talent, but he's developed so good where he's one of the biggest threats for Baylor. And he's made them such a more complete team that makes me want to buy into them, I think, a little bit more. Because, yeah, as you said, you can go on and on with the guards, Ray J, Jacoby, Jaden Nunn, and they're doing this without Langston Love, who's probably going to be Big 12 player of the year. I think he's a game time decision tomorrow as well. But yeah, they're getting dangerous. And I think outside of Houston, I think teams in the Big 12 that can win, that are capable of winning the national championship, and I can, see him winning the Natty, is Houston, Baylor, and like maybe Kansas. Like, Iowa State has been unbelievable this year, and their defense, as you said, is so elite. But when you're, yeah, and they'll probably, make the Sweet 16, they'll probably have success in the tournament. But once they play an elite offense, maybe they won't be able to compete as much with them, or even a team that plays the same style. Like, they've blown games to Houston, who just plays their style but better. They lost to Baylor and BYU, who are two of the most elite offenses in the country. So maybe that'll exploit them, and they had, they haven't had nearly as much success away as they do at home. So I'm super interested because, March is coming around, so we get to have these conversations about who you think's, going to go farther, and, matchups are so big too. So once we get the bracket in front of us, it'll be a lot better to easier to see the picture. But it's definitely an interesting conversation to have as to what, because everyone talks about the Big 12 being the best, but which teams can actually make a run?
I think you're right. I think it's for sure Houston and Baylor. Those are the two that I'm confident can win it all. I think both those teams can win it all.
Yeah.
And then the next tier, we can like go through tiers if you want. We can
Yeah.
contenders and but the next tier I'd say Kansas, Iowa State, BYU. And I don't know, maybe Texas. I'm not sure they're with those teams yet, but they're around
Yeah.
there. And then the next tier is the maybe that's where Texas goes. That teams that like Texas Tech, Texas. I think TCU still could,
Yeah.
make a little bit of noise.
Yeah.
But
We'll get into that too.
yeah, we'll talk about that later. But yeah, it's really this is the best time of the whole year, because the whole month of March we're looking forward to this thing, and we can talk about. I mean, we really do. We're starting to really get an idea about these teams and what
Yeah.
they, what the ceilings look like, what the floors look like. And I just think Houston and Baylor, not only do they have a pretty high ceiling, I think both those teams have, Houston especially has a really high floor.
Yeah.
But Baylor, I think, maybe this is all recency bias, but I think they have a pretty high floor as well.
Yeah, if I were to tier teams, I think I would still have Houston in a tier of their own.
Yeah, you're probably
And
right
then,
about that. Yeah.
yeah, and then throw like Baylor at the start of like Baylor, Iowa State, Kansas, and I
Kansas.
might even throw BYU into that tier two. And
Yeah.
then it gets into Tech, TCU,
Texas.
UT, OU, and then like Cincy and K-State, and like UCF.
If they make a crazy run and those teams probably, I mean, don't you think
Yeah.
those teams now probably have to go win it in Kansas City?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I was like, those three are like good enough to like,
Like they could do it. It could
yeah. And
happen.
then, yeah, and then the Boynton boys and Westphal are in the last tier there. But those would be like my five tiers, I
Yeah,
think that
I
is
like
for the
that.
Big 12.
Yeah, I like
But
that.
yeah, I mean, just having five tiers in a conference shows you how many different teams are around the same. And I think it's, I'm just super excited to see how it's going to unravel this next week in KC for sure.
Yeah, that'll be yeah. It's gonna be it's just there's no time like March,
Yeah.
but to put it simply, and we still have two games left of the regular season before we go to Kansas City,
Yeah.
and a lot can happen. So this will
Definitely.
be a really fun week. Do you have I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you have a favorite matchup for this week?
God, we talked about that Baylor UT.
Yeah, that's a big Monday game, so that'll be big.
Yeah, I think it's Kansas at Houston, which is going to
Oh
be
yeah.
great,
Oh
especially
yeah.
if McCullough's healthy, which is, I think from the outside in, yeah, those top two tiers teams, that's probably going to be my highlight. There's always such great games that are like, I think BYU is, at Iowa State, which is going to be great. This week's going to be another great one. You know, the K-State Kansas play again this week, and K-State, if they get a couple wins, maybe they could sneak in. I don't know, but we'll figure it out. There's a lot to see in this week, and there's a lot to see in KC for sure.
Yeah, Texas OU is another rivalry. We got a
Yeah.
couple rivalry matchups this week, which is always fun.
Yeah.
It'll be there's a lot that can happen. We could be like Baylor could lose both the games this week, and we could be completely out on them next week. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's
Yeah,
fluid.
the thing about the talk with Colin, we were a lot more optimistic about
Yeah.
this Frogs
Yeah,
team. So like,
we should warn the listener. This was before the
yeah,
premiere of a week
it
that
was
you just had.
literally like a couple hours before the Baylor game started. So
If we had
we
that
probably had a much
conversation
different
today,
tone.
yeah,
Exactly.
Colin would be saying different things, I would imagine.
Exactly. But yeah, if you're ready to get into some recent TCU talk, on
Yeah,
down.
let's sure. Let's take a break and talk about the disaster of a week that TCU had.
Let's do it.
Okay, we're gonna talk TCU. Pretty tough to put it simply. I'll let you start because you're at that Baylor game. That was a game that was, at least by us, and you'll hear it when we talk to Colin. This was a high anticipated game. You can say more about the atmosphere and the crowd that was there, but
Yeah.
watching on TV was completely deflating, especially because it was just a zone, and we'll get into this all later, but it was a zone that completely fooled this team. But yeah, take it away. Tell me about
Yeah.
this.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week. We talked about it on the call-in interview. It was one of the most highly anticipated games of the year, and I think coming off such a good outing against Cincinnati. You're feeling optimistic about this team, and you already beat Baylor at Baylor, so you know you're feeling good about it. Obviously a tough team, but you know, huge crowd, and then just a straight up letdown, to be honest. Like, usually I try to find positives about every game, but there, like in this game, there literally was pretty much none. I guess the fact that like everybody stayed healthy who was playing, but yeah, it was just a complete letdown of a game. As you noted, the zone just completely screwed us, and even Misi was eating us inside. Ray J had 9, 9, and 9, I believe.
That's awesome.
Jacoby was good. I mean, Jalen Bridges was hitting threes at the start. And it's not like, and I even think too that Baylor was kind of missing shots at the start of that game. So it was like closer than it seemed, but we just completely dropped the ball. And especially in that second half when it rolled over, I think we had an 8-0 run to end the game, which is like, I guess that's the silver lining that the score looked better than it was. But 54 points in a Big 12 game is unacceptable, and you have to be able to do better than that.
Yeah, the thing is about this game, like we've talked already a lot about how good Baylor's offense is.
Yeah.
But they really weren't. I mean, that wasn't what got TCU, which is the
Yeah,
frustrating part for
that's
me.
what I mean. Like, they were missing shots, exactly. So they
Like they
allowed
shot,
us to be in that game. We would just
yeah,
drop the ball.
they shot like 37% from the field. They did shoot 41% from three, which is good. But when you hold Baylor at 62, especially a team like TCU that you're not known for your defense, you're known for this offense that flies and that scores. Like I wonder if someone had told us three, when we were talking to Colin on Monday, you hold Baylor to 62,
Yeah.
and what do you think happens? I think we probably all say that there's a really good chance TCU wins because,
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you can really ask. And no one could make a shot for TCU. TCU was 33% from the field, 26% from three. They were 15 of 18 from free throws, which is 83%, which is good. This team has trouble with free throws, so I guess it was fine to see them hit some free throws, but nobody can make a shot. Trey Tennyson,
Yeah,
0
man.
of 8, 0 for 5 from 3. Emmanuel Miller was, he was still, he shot the ball six times. He's your best
Yeah.
guy. And he had 10-5 and, well, I guess he had 10-5 and 1, but I mean, you gotta find a way to give him the ball, get him some looks. I guess one of the other things, Xavier Cork was pretty decent. He had some good
Yeah,
moments. He
especially
had
early
four
on
four.
too.
Yeah, only played 9 minutes or 14 minutes, scored 9 points. Your guards didn't get, I mean, Jameer was okay at 11 and 4. Avery was not great. He had 7 points and five turnovers. So, just a complete letdown, to put it simply.
Yeah, it really came down to simple execution. Like Jamie said after the game, they had the game plan and they just didn't execute to exactly what the game plan was. You know, it's again, it's simple stuff. AAU, you grow up doing this. When you're in the zone, you get the ball inside to the guy at the post or, you know, upper key, like free throw line. They collapse, you kick out, get open shots, you know, that kind of simple stuff. And they had the right set. They just weren't hitting E-men at the post, I think. Who was in that position a lot, or Jacoby too when he was coming in. But yeah, and especially when your top 3-point shooters, you know, they shot 5 of 19 for three, and especially Trey going 0 of 5. That's we'll get into the BYU game later, but that was kind of a silver lining of the BYU. Trey was kind of back there, and he was seen shooting, you know, late after that Baylor game ended. So he's at least a little back from where that was. But it was Yeah, it was simple execution, simple stuff. And to your note on E-man, I thought about this a lot. Like, he was only used on 18% of the possessions, which is insane because I think we've talked about it again and again. E-man's by far the best player on this team and one of the best players in the Big 12. So I don't know if he even realizes just how good he is and how important he is to this team, because when your offense is going downhill and you have nothing left to go, like, he should be more aggressive. Like, he should be taking way more than six shots in a game where nothing else is falling for you. You know, just kind of give to him, let him work. And if he misses some shots, that's fine. But at least getting him in rhythm, because you can live with E-man missing shots, but I'd rather have E-man go like 3 of 15 than like 1 of 6. So, yeah, I would want him to be more aggressive. Also, too, with both games, I think we really miss Uday, and I think this little skit has showed us how much he means to this team. Because as much as Esom's been a nice little piece, as much as X has had his moments, Uday is by far the best five man, big man on this team. Just being as a rim protector, like he would have defended Misi better. He was huge in the 3-OT game against Baylor that allowed us to come back, and he was, you know, the best defender, rebounder. He was even getting better on the offensive end as the season was coming on, which makes his injury even worse. But I mean, he should be back soon. Whenever Jamie gets asked about him in the press conferences, he keeps saying it's up to him. You know, he's out of his boots, so just whenever he feels comfortable, I guess. But I would like to see him back soon to help this team, because these next few games are going to be massive for where we lie. Because dropping these two games, you're back in that little bubble conversation, especially if you know they're skid. It's not looking good.
I think we're kind of, this is when you start to really miss a guy like Mike Miles.
Yeah, for
You
sure.
talk about how, like, when you're struggling to score, like, the game plan should be find your best player, find your best scorer, and let him try to score.
Yeah.
And I mean, Eman was 2 of 6. He made 2 baskets. He made 5 free throws. So that's where all those points came from. But like in a game like this, I just imagine that Mike is gonna demand the ball, and he's gonna do what he can, even if he misses, like shoot it, be aggressive.
Yeah.
And I think we've talked about it. Maybe it was this one, this interview with Colin, maybe it was the last one, about how this team's interesting because you really don't have that star, I guess. And Eman's a star. I don't think we said
Yeah.
star, but like you don't have that completely dynamic scorer that can take over a game at any point. And we've seen Eman have huge games, but I think it is something that I think TCU needs him to improve on, and they need to improve on it too. They need to just give him the ball,
Yeah.
because they didn't get it to him in the high post a lot. I mean, he was there in that zone, and you
Yeah,
get
the
it at the
guard
high
just weren't
post.
getting to him.
Yeah, you
Yeah.
get it at the high post, it opens everything up. The zone, crashes. And like you said, you kick out, or you take that shot. But Yeah, I'd love to see him have a bounce back week against two teams that are pretty favorable. Like you could, I mean, he could bounce back. He should bounce back. But yeah, it was just so crazy to see a an offense like TCU with a coach like Jamie Dixon completely, like. They'd never seen a zone before. It was crazy. They, I mean, it was really difficult basketball to watch. I mean, it was terrible basketball to watch. I just, yeah, it was really confusing to me that they could not seem to find an adjustment.
As we talked about before, like it was there, we just weren't executing.
Yeah, it
And the
was.
guards, I think the guards may be better. And yeah, to your point, like with Mike gone and the start to go over, like Eman is the guy. And
Yeah, he's a
he
guy.
should be able to handle doing more. And it's nothing on him except for just be more aggressive. Like that's
Yeah.
it's as simple as that.
I mean, if he goes 2 for 10, fine, you know? I just like to see him shoot the ball.
And then they give more attention to him and that frees up other guys. But when he's
Yeah.
being more reluctant in that role, and I mean he literally has not had a game under double digits all conference season, so he's been amazing. But to even take it to that next level, like, he could be an even better scorer, or he is a great scorer and he could even show that more than he is. So I think playing through him would help this team a lot more, I think, especially in the half court, because we said it again and again, half court woes and stuff like that. But yeah, just a super disappointing game. And the thing you take from that is just at least you know that you're vulnerable against the zone now, so you can fix it before the tournament, because you don't want it to get to kind of take you by surprise when it happens. And I think that's the silver lining from it. You know your weaknesses a little more, especially from both these games, that you could fix it before March, because all it takes is just getting hot at the right time. And this team is so inconsistent, but they've proven that when they're on, they can be as good as it comes. They've beaten the Houstons, they've beaten at Baylor. We just
When
talked
they're
about those
on,
two.
I think they're like when they're on, I think they're in that tier that you created with like
For sure.
the Kansas, the Iowa State. I really do think
Yeah.
they're probably at the bottom end of that tier when they are on, but it's just so hard to get them to stay on. They haven't
Yeah.
stayed on, you know.
Yeah, and if you want to go to the BYU game, I mean, that was in a nutshell in the BYU. They were
Yeah.
unbelievable, especially like later in the first half. They were hitting every three. I think they were like 6 of 7 from three at one point. Everything was going well. BYU was kind of like missing open shots at the start, but I mean, it just showed like they were going into Provo and they were up what 16, 17 at the half, whatever it was.
17, yeah.
Yeah, and then it was just a complete letdown. Like your offense
Yeah.
wasn't going as good, and they were just leaving. Like they just had defensive lapse after defensive lapse, which plays more into the traditional struggles that they've had all year, which is defense, which Jamie's harped about it all year. Their offense wasn't really the problem. The second half, I guess a little bit it was, but really it was just letting up open threes because BYU has been vulnerable. And also, Fus Traore giving us 21 on 8 of 11. He was just bullying our big men. So then that's having Uday out. The Uday effect is massive. He's so important to this team. And I hope these last two games showed him and he'll get back soon. But I want to see this team healthy with Uday before I really. Yeah, I guess you have to a little bit panic now because these two games were about as bad as it gets, and that collapse was about as bad as it gets, specifically in the BYU game, from going up 17 and feeling good at half to just like an all-time, I don't know what they had, 58 in the second half. I think it was 58 to 29, which is unbelievable to be able to let up on defense that much, and they just look defeated at the end of it. So not a week you can't take a lot of positives, but the positive I'm taking is that it happened now, so you
That's
can
true.
correct it coming in, and you have, these last couple of games. I don't want to say get right games because you have to win them, but I guess they're at least a little bit more favorable.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was not able to watch this game. I kept up with it, and it was halftime. I texted you like, "Whoa, 46 points a half.
Yeah.
They're taking it to BYU." Like, BYU, I think, was a 6.5 point favorite, and TCU, I didn't watch it. I've since watched the highlights, but 46 to 29 at half. Like, whoa,
Yeah,
this
Trey
is
was
a,
hot. Yeah,
yeah,
Jacob,
this
everyone
is.
was playing good. It was like smooth living.
And I'm thinking, like, this is the exact type of bounce back that you need to have after that crap show of the Baylor game. And then I'm checking my phone and it's getting closer. I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden it's not even close. Like, BYU is winning comfortably. I'll just say, allowing 58 points and a half, I don't know what the record is for, like, I don't know, Big 12 game, but that is one of the That's one of the worst things. I mean, like, especially after you kind of handled Baylor's offense a little bit, and a lot of that had to do with Baylor not hitting their shots. But 58 points and a half in the second half, when you allowed 29 in the first half, is a complete meltdown. That's literally, oh, let's see if I do my math here. I think that's literally double. It
Yeah.
went going from 29 to 58, they're doubling their score. And it's just an all-time collapse, all-time meltdown. And it's just, yeah, not a lot of positives to take away. But
Yeah,
if
the vibes are down right now with
the vibes are
TCU for
down,
sure.
I will. So here are the positives. I've come up with a couple. TCU's lost two games in a row on three occasions this year. The first time was Cincy and Iowa State. They responded to those two losses by beating Oklahoma State, Baylor, and Texas Tech, three-game win streak. Right after that is their second back-to-back losses. It's Texas and Iowa State. They respond to that by beating West Virginia and Kansas State the very next week. So now you lose to Baylor and BYU. This team has shown that they can, and they have bounced back after horrible weeks, and they get West Virginia and UCF, two games that they should win. You've kind of coined the phrase "can't lose." I would go as far to
Yeah.
say these are actually must wins.
Yeah.
You have to win these, or else, if even if you drop one of these, you're probably okay. But it, I mean,
You
it's
gotta
getting
make a, I mean, you
really.
gotta get win a game in the Big 12 tourney too if you drop one of these,
Yeah,
at least.
it's getting way too close for comfort, especially after, like, that stretch of West Virginia, Kansas State, that heartbreaking loss to Texas Tech, handling Cincinnati. Like, the vibes are high. We're thinking, what if they close this out winning 7 of 8 or whatever we said? And
Yeah.
I mean, it's fallen off the rails. These are the first must-win games of the season for TCU, and I think they got really lucky that it's West Virginia and UCF. Because those two
Yeah.
teams should not be beating TCU, especially at this time of the year. And what's at stake for TCU? Hopefully, like you said, Uday's back. It sounds like it's just gonna be whenever he feels right. And
Yeah.
so that's at least encouraging that it's nothing that should be keeping him out super long. But yeah, so I guess the bright side is, they've lost two in a row before, twice, and both times they responded really well. So hopefully that continues this week. But I don't think it's a gimme, especially because you're going to West Virginia, which is still, as bad as West Virginia is, it's still the best home court advantage in the country according to KenPom. So that's not a guaranteed win. And then you got a frisky UCF team that could score the ball, and that, their only shot is if they win literally every single one of their remaining games. So they're gonna kind of have that something to play for. But it's an opportunity for TCU. They should be beating both these teams, but with the way they played this week, I do not think it's a guarantee that they win both those games.
Yeah, another thing I'll add too that I don't know if it's positive, but like Baylor, both Baylor and BYU are not like bad losses. They're
Yeah.
both elite teams.
I think it's the way they lost.
Yeah,
It's not
exactly.
that
It's
they
the way
lost.
they lost. But when you look at it from like a broad perspective and for what the committee's looking at on
Yeah.
Selection Sunday, it's like, oh, you lost to Baylor and BYU, nothing bad. And they haven't lost to a team worse than, I guess at Cincinnati or like Nevada are your worst losses, but they haven't really had like a horrible loss
Yeah,
at this
that's
point.
true.
Like they haven't lost to a team that's worse than West Virginia and UCF, and they've taken care of the subpar team so far. So hopefully that keeps up. I don't want to jinx anything, but yeah, looking at West Virginia and UCF, we talked about these teams before a lot. Yeah, Westfaw's they're both frisky. Like they especially at Westfaw, and at UCF with I guess a little bit of hope left. They're Ken Pom 65. Not really, but like I mean you're still playing for something. You want to play spoiler at this point. Yeah, and then the game against UCF, even at home, like the home crowd's not gonna be great for that, first Saturday spring break and all that kind of stuff. People are gonna be out of here. So the intensity of that, like you can sleep on one of these teams. Hopefully these losses have sparked something and have, maybe figured stuff out on how to adjust these issues we've had. One thing that I would actually be interested to see if we do is have a tighter rotation. I don't know if it's any specific guys, but I would like to see E-Man play 40 minutes a night. I would like to see like Micah Peavy play 40 minutes tonight. Like, the guys that work for you. Like, I don't know if you have to be giving, especially like if Uday comes back, like a
One of the
Morgan
bigs probably.
Mustafa. Yeah. Or if Chuck, I don't know. Like, Chuck's so hit or miss. If he's on, I guess roll with him. But, yeah, I don't know if you want to have like a 10-man rotation going or playing that many minutes. Like they all play double digit minutes. It's not like even just a spark for a couple minutes or so at the end of a half. Just play your best guys at this point. There's no playing out process.
Like I'm okay
So
if they go and they play and Jamie plays like six or seven guys.
yeah,
Like that's fine
exactly.
with me. You got
And
to start
especially
making some of
just
those decisions, I think.
yeah, because Eman's proven he can play a lot of minutes and he's in great shape. And Eman does not get in foul trouble, so there should be no reason to take him out because he's your best player. I think you played Jacoby. I think he's proven that he's been great, especially later in the year. I think you played Trey, the other guards, and other than that, I don't know if anybody has earned substantial minutes. So you run those two, Jacoby and Trey off the bench, and then your starters, and then. In my opinion, those guys should be the only ones getting substantial, but we'll see how it goes. One thing that's proven to be big with this TCU team is that you can't get too low in the lows and you can't get too high on the highs because they're so inconsistent. So right now they look like an awful team coming into it, but hopefully when we're recording the pod next week, you have two nice games and you're feeling optimistic going to the tournament. So I think a lot of fans are discouraged right now, but you got to keep a broader perspective that they're still in good position to make the tournament, and you still have a lot of ball left. And if you just get hot at the right time, which this team has done, you can make a run.
And
So,
if they take care of business this week, they still go 10-8 in the Big 12. 10-8 in the Big 12. So that's the best I think
that's an
they've
awesome
ever
year,
done.
yeah.
So they have a lot in front of them. It's not. It feels like this is worst case scenario. Things are, I mean, like the world is ending, but it's
Yeah.
not. It's not really.
I would also add too, like even broader perspective, coming into this year, I don't even think we're in a lot of like tournament pictures. I think just being with the loss of all your Eddie, Mike, DB, all these massive guys that you had on your team and such a big roster turnaround that a lot of bracketologists didn't even see us, either we're either just missing on the bubble, like we were a lot in that range. So we've had a solid year and we put ourselves in position that if we take care of business, we'll be in. And I think that we can bounce back. As you said, we bounced back before, we can bounce back again from this. And then maybe we'll be too optimistic next week again, but I'd rather be too optimistic than too down. So still a lot of ball left to play and I'm still hyped for it.
Before we preview the West Virginia UCF games, I have a couple questions for you. My first question is, what is it with this team playing in the second half and being significantly worse? Because we saw the BYU game, we saw it like I think of that Texas Tech game last week where they're up 10 with like 6 minutes left, fall apart. I think of that Cincinnati game where they basically have the win if they make one free throw, but they fall apart. I'm probably missing a couple more, but what is it with this team in the second half just not being consistently good?
I think you just said, the word. They're just not consistent. Like, another thing with this team is that before the Baylor and BYU games, like, we were the comeback guy. We were 6-4 before those when being down 10. So we either start super slow and come way back, or we start good and end bad. We are not a consistent team. We've only put it together, I don't know, a couple. I guess West Virginia and Cincinnati are the only two games I can think of where we really put together a complete game where it wasn't stressful. Because it's like watching TCU, you got to have like a heart monitor next to you. It's insane. Like football too. Like every TCU sport, they make it tough on you, and you're
Baseball
gonna have
right
to stay.
now.
Yeah, baseball.
Baseball's
And
going
we're coming
crazy.
back. Yeah, shout out baseball, 11-0. But yeah, they're coming back from every game. They just play teams close, and I think it's, if they're gonna be up big and have a good half, they're gonna make they're you've been you should never feel comfortable or out of it if you're TCU. Like, you should never feel like, unless it's until the fat lady sings at the end, you should never feel good about what you're at. So I think it's just that. I think it's just the style of team we are. We can go like 5 minutes scoreless, so we could put up like 25 in 5 minutes. It's
It's
crazy
weird.
what this team can do, and both good and bad. And I think that's just been shown throughout this year.
It's a weird dynamic. Like the game is never over for TCU, in either direction. So, all right, my second question is, so we've done that in or out segment. We haven't done it, I guess, the last 2 weeks, but we did for a long time. And a while ago, TCU was in that conversation. We haven't included them in a long time. But my question for you is, are they now back? Do they now get to come back and be in or out? Or have they done enough? Is this, I guess the question is this team back on the bubble?
I think they are back in the bubble, and I think that they've yeah, those two losses are bad, and they dropped their metrics for sure. They're 32 in KenPom. I'm interested to see what their net is,
They were
but
25 in KenPom last week, so.
yeah. So you were feeling pretty safe last week, and as you said, it's not really the losses, but the way that they're 38 net. I think you'd be ignorant to say they aren't, but I do believe if you take care of business, they're in a position where they should be fine. But as you said, I agree with you. Must win these last two, and you want to win at least one in the Big 12 tourney, especially if they're in a spot where they play a worse team. But yeah, they still have work to do. They're not a lock by any means, and I would say they're definitely back in the bubble, especially if there's a lot of bid stealers. Conference tourneys are starting as soon as tomorrow, as soon as when people are listening to this. So you got to be on the lookout for bid stealers, and hopefully we're not stressed out on Selection Sunday, but we'll see, because we're back on the bubble for sure.
It's crazy, the comparisons like with this team and TCU baseball, what they've showed us the last couple weeks or last couple days. Like they make you feel really good. I think, I don't know the exact stuff, but they're up big on, I think it's Arizona State.
At Globe Life.
The comparison basketball, after that Cincinnati win, you and I are feeling really good and confident about this team, and we feel, like they can finish it out really well. And then Arizona State comes back, takes the lead. And I think now in the basketball side of things, you lose two straight in a really bad way. And then baseball at least has been able to overcome their meltdowns, and TCU has kind of been able to do that too with the way they respond to back-to-back losses. So it's kind of funny how TCU athletics is just trying to do as much damage to TCU fans' hearts as they possibly can right now.
Yeah, they make it interesting for sure. But, you want to get into predictions for this week?
Yeah, let's talk about these two games, West Virginia and UCF. We've talked a little bit about it. West Virginia is a tough place to go play, but it's West Virginia. You should be winning. And then UCF's a team where they have to win their next two games against Houston and TCU, and then they have to go win every game in the conference tournament. So very unlikely, but they're not. I mean, none of these teams are technically out of it, whatever. But I guess it's two teams who are going to want to beat TCU. What do you think about this week? What do you want to see different? What do you want to see better? And then, give me your prediction.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see everything better.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, it was
all of
it was as bad. Yeah, everything. but just do what you did in the first game against West Virginia. Like, that was one of the good games where it was a complete game. Mm-hmm. What I really want to see is Uday back in the lineup. I want to see us healthy, getting him worked back in, and see where we're at to be able to know exactly where our guys lie. Westphal, you know, Raekwon Battle's the guy there that takes the majority of his shots. Jesse Edwards is good, which we'll need Uday for, because he's one of the best big men in the conference, honestly, especially as of late. Kirk Reese is always fun to go against. Little rivalry there. But yeah, Westphal is super tough to play, and that crowd's going to be into it. Even last year, we had a little bit of a little fight against him too. It's kind of like an underrated little basketball rivalry. Like, we don't like each other, which is fun. Their offense is bad, but I would put Micah on Raekwon, and hopefully that makes you fine. UCF, this is our first time playing. It's funny playing in the first time in the last game of the season. Yeah. But Darius Johnson, Jalen Sellers, that's a very underrated backcourt of two guys that can kill you. Shamari Allen is good. Little third piece there, and then Ibrahima Diallo is one of those rebounders in the conference. So another guy you want, another guy you want Uday back for. So two teams that can kill you, or two teams that can get you if you're not on your game. Like, that's what's so tough about being the Big 12. But two teams you should win, and I don't want to say I'm confident just because of how we played the last couple of games, but yeah, I still think we should win these.
Yeah. Darius Johnson, Jalen Sellers for UCF. We talk about that Kansas duo in the Big 12. This is one of probably the better duos in the Big 12. And the chance that both those guys are back for UCF next year. I just want to talk about UCF. We didn't get to talk about them enough just because they're, so mid. But maybe next year we'll talk about them a little bit more. But, last week you predicted 1-1. I predicted 2-0. So we both miserably failed.
UCF had a good road win, I should add, at Oklahoma State this week, where they were underdogs in that. So, I mean, they've proven they can win on the road, which is
true.
As of recent, too. So even at home, you're not comfortable.
They give Iowa State a little bit of a scare. And the thing about UCF, like,
they're up late.
They have those two scorers. Darius Johnson, Jalen Sellers both can score the ball really well. But I think a lot of people don't realize that their defense is really good. Like, it's legitimately really good. Their defense, according to KenPom, is the 10th best in the whole country. It's just the offense is 178th. So you're not getting enough offensively. But they're a dangerous team, man. And if TCU messes around, which they completely messed around all week last week. So if they keep messing around, there's a scenario, like, I don't even want to really talk about it, but if you lose both these games, things are getting really crazy, and it's, it'll be quite a pod next week. But I think that I really do trust this team's ability to bounce back, especially if you're getting Uday back, which it seems like you should have him at least for that UCF game.
Yeah, I would hope so.
And that West Virginia game is on Wednesday, I think. So that gives you a couple more days for him to get ready and healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's silly. It's crazy predicting this team to go undefeated after what we just had to watch from them. But I do think that they, I mean, they're going to be favored in both these games, probably fairly comfortably. Like it's not really a mystery. They should be winning these games. So I'm going to go 2-0. It's crazy, but if they go 2-0, we're back here talking about a 10-8 in Big 12, which is the best that TCU would have ever done. And I think they have a chance to, I don't know, really bounce back here and help TCU fans forget about what the week was that they just had.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm gonna pick him go to 2-0 too, as crazy as it is, but it's just a testament to how this team has been all year. Like, we've played crazy game after crazy game, and it's been up and down. You know, the fan base has gone both ways of being hype about this team and then down on this team. And I think this is gonna happen again, and I think we're gonna be back hype on this team come next week. Yeah, 2-0. I think we're playing for more than they are, which should make us win, or should give us the benefit, you know, that we're kind of back against the wall at this point and kind of prove the doubters wrong a little bit. But yeah, I think we should take care of business, and yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yep, should be. I mean, it should be a good week for TCU. Should be, but who knows? Who
Yeah.
knows with the way they're playing right now? Well, should we get to Colin?
Yeah. Yeah,
Do
I
you have
want to
anything
add
else?
again. Yeah, thanks to Colin for coming on. We talked about the interview too, but I met him in person for the first time the other day, which is cool. And yeah, I guess he's a recurring guest now, friend of the show. Just
Yeah.
another fun conversation with him. A lot more fun at the time, you know what I mean? But yeah, no, it was great. We talked some more broad stuff too, if it's not
Yeah.
just TCU this year. And we should have some fun guest lineup. We should have a little bonus women's episode
Yeah.
dropping
Yeah.
right before
We're gonna
the
have
Big
Tori
12
back on
tournament.
soon.
Yeah, we're gonna
Yeah.
have Tori back on, and then hopefully we have another fun guest next week. So
Yeah.
this is March, so
This is
I'm excited
March.
for it, and hopefully the vibes are back high next week.
Yeah.
That'd be hype.
Yeah. Yeah, I will join you in thanking Colin. He is always really fun to talk TCU basketball. Actually, just any basketball with. He's
Yeah.
a super like you know he's a great basketball mind, and he knows what's he's covered basketball for years. So, it's always cool to get his insight on not only TCU but the conference as a whole.
Yeah.
He kind of laid out the conference for us, which was cool. And yeah, like you said, it was. I mean, he was high on Texas before Texas had the week it did. So we won't spoil any more, but it's a good interview. Stick around for it. And again, a little warning: the vibes were way different then than they are now. So
Yeah.
just keep that in mind as you listen. But yeah,
Definitely.
let's take a break and get the call-in interview going.
Yeah, let's kick it to him.
Cool.
Okay, now on the Frog Fever Pod, we have a special guest, recurring guest now, Colin Post, the former writer for TC360, 247, all that jazz, TCU grad. Colin, we thank you for having on. And last time we had you on was, I think, right before the Clemson game, when we were talking about, you know, don't panic if this team loses, all the transfers. We didn't really know what this team had brought, but how have you thought the season's gone since that game, and are you pleased with what the Frogs brought to the table?
Dude, I am. I was talking, first of all, Nick Davis, thanks for having me on, guys. Always love joining you guys, and got to meet Nick in person for the first time on Saturday at the Cincy
Yeah,
game. So
that was
that was fun.
fun. Fun
Yeah, it
game
was
too.
good. Good little win. But dude, I've been pleased. I was talking to somebody about this earlier today, Oklahoma State grad actually, so a Big 12 hoops fan, and just it has felt different because TCU doesn't have a national star necessarily, or someone who is just maybe even a Big 12 Player of the Year contender, which you could maybe even argue that for Emmanuel, but they just don't have the same pop maybe they did last year, but they're going to finish better in the Big 12. And unless something bad happens, this team will finish as the best team that's ever come through TCU when it comes to how they've performed in a really tough conference. And one thing I really love about TCU is they do not allow other teams to control games against them. Other than maybe Iowa State on the road, TCU has been in every game for pretty much the whole game, even once they've lost. And that's really encouraging to me. We've seen in the last 2 years a TCU team that would win big games and then struggle at other times with some double digit losses. And this team has remained steady and consistent. And I think there are a lot of factors to that. But overall, I've been pleased and really excited about this team.
I'm curious to know, like, obviously you watch a lot of TCU, you know a lot about this team. I'm curious to know what the biggest surprise for you about this team has been this year.
Absolutely. I think the easy answer there is the offense. I mean, you think about Jamie Dixon, ever since he's been coaching basketball, defense has been the main priority for him. To think about a team, and we, yeah, I think he said it last year, we want to be the best defensive team in the country. We've got guys like Micah Peavy, who are some of the better on-ball defenders that we see in the Big 12. And Dixon just strives to be great defensively. And then tries to just be quick and efficient offensively. Obviously, Damian Ball was a huge leader, Mike Miles of the fast break offense, and they're still very fast. But for TCU and KenPom to be a number 26 offense in the country and to be better offensively, scoring over 80 points a game than they are defensively, is not something I saw coming. And especially not once again without a team that has necessarily an elite bucket getter. Or a guy that could score at will. I was expecting for it to be the off opposite. And if anything, this team has, when it's lost, it has been because of defense, not offense. And so that has really been surprising to me. And I think what's good is when you go into March, you either want to have two things, one of two things, a great offense or a dude who in big moments can get big buckets for you. TCU is TBD on the second one. It's come and it's gone this year. But the first one is for sure there. TCU's got a really good offense. And so I'm encouraged by that. And honestly, they shot free throws really well on Saturday too, which since I've been at TCU has never been true of a Jamie Dixon squad. So yeah, I think that's probably on the offensive end the biggest thing I've been surprised by.
Yeah, you mentioned the guards too. Obviously losing Mike and DB, who are obviously or arguably your best players last year. What have been your thoughts of Avery Anderson, Tennyson, and Jameer? Because they've had bright spots and they also haven't this year. So how do you think they progress, especially heading into March here?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Early on, you saw Avery, well, you saw Jameer be the starting guy, and then over time, it seemed like, man, maybe Jameer needs a little time to develop, and so he kind of moved to the bench, which made sense and was really helpful for him, I think, to kind of just get adjusted. You know, it's underrated how hard it is to start a game at this level, even for a guy that's been in college basketball for 5 years. And Avery had just done it in this conference for so long that it was really helpful. But from Avery, we saw flashes of greatness, but just some inefficiency and even some turnover issues. And then some really cool poise from Jameer in the Baylor game, which I think is one of the biggest wins of the whole season for any team in the country this year. And so that was a really, in my opinion, that was a cool turning point for Jameer of like, man, some real confidence gained. And so when it comes to strictly the point guards, I lean Jameer over Avery, but they both have inefficiency issues. And we haven't seen this year any of the Avery Anderson that cooked Baylor in the 2021 Big 12 tournament. We haven't seen in every game the Jameer Nelson that was unstoppable down the stretch in Foster Pavilion. Even the game winner that he had against Kansas State, he had a pretty poor shooting day that day. And it's kind of hard to trust a dude that is shooting 27% from three to take a big time shot. You know, thank goodness he hit it, which is awesome. But and then when you talk about Trey, you know, he's part of the guards, but more of obviously that like three role. And I love what he brings. He's an elite shooter. What we have seen in the last four games only has had double digit threes in one of those games. Obviously, he was 0 for 4 against Tech. And so it seems like he too has lapses where his confidence dips. And it's one of those things where, man, he sometimes needs the shots to come to him, which early in Big 12 play felt like that was not characteristic of him, that he was seeking, hunting shots. And so I'm not exactly sure where that is coming from because the Trey that was playing in early January was just, it seemed like he had all the confidence in the world when it came to a green light. In the last couple of games, he's kind of slowed down that area. So to summarize all of this, I love what all three of them bring, and I'm excited about each of them. And I think their experience, each of them have been experienced at the college level. Trey and Avery have played in the NCAA tournament, is helpful, but their inefficiency is an issue. And you do need to have great guard play to win in March. And so hoping that they, over these next four games and the Big 12 tournament, can really kind of hammer that out when it comes to that rotation.
Yeah, another guy, when we had you on last, I think we talked a little bit about Jakobi Coles because at the time he had been playing really well, but a couple of games after that he got hurt and he missed a couple of games, came back, and really wasn't the same guy at all. And in the last couple of weeks he's kind of returned to form. He's coming off the bench. He's scored in double digits, I think 6 of the last 7 games, something like that. How important is he, especially when he's coming off the bench? How important is it that, you know, he's playing well and he's able to give TCU some bucket getting off the bench?
Yeah, what I love about Jakobi Coles is his game is so smooth, and almost always he is going to be a mismatch for whoever you're playing. And so you saw on Saturday against Cincy, I forget exactly how to say his name, but Bendogo from Cincy, he just did not know what to do. A 7-footer, who isn't necessarily super fluid in his movement, against a 6'8" Jakobi Coles. And we often saw Jakobi would just turn around and be open. And so obviously not every team has a big like that, and that's not necessarily always going to be the case. But what I like about his game is it's so fluid, and he can score on all three levels. And because of his size, he's not a true big, but he's also not a guard. It really, really helps create mismatches for TCU. And we saw early during his injury, his movement just wasn't there. I think his knee slash leg was just really not allowing him to move the ball well. And I mean, we saw a stretch of, I think it was 10 games, where he was in single digits. And then, kind of like you said, Davis, he's turned it on since. And Saturday, he was just phenomenal. I mean, 6 for 10, 18 points, and almost didn't miss. And so I really like that. Obviously, we saw in the last Cincy game, he kind of missed that potential game winner, or maybe that was a game tire. But I love his game. When he shoots confidently, it's really effective for TCU, creates mismatches. And to me, on the offensive end, he's one of the two or three most important guys on this team, kind of going down the stretch.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit too about more of the broader look of the Big 12 as we get down the stretch here. TCU is currently ranked 4th, I believe, in the Big 12 standings. And where do you see them lie with the rest of the best conference in the world? And what Big 12 teams do you see going the farthest in March?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Obviously, the Big 12 is interesting because it's one of those things where it is the best team in the country because of how well every team does on any given night. I mean, West Virginia really is the only team that I would say is an easy win at this point, and we even see them compete at times. But what is interesting about this conference right now is it does not have a clear standout from the core group. Houston right now is obviously king, and if that metric where a top 20 offensive and defensive team wins the Natty, which has been true since 2002, Houston is the only team from this conference that has a chance to win the Natty. So obviously any year could break that. But first off, my thought is obviously Houston matters a ton. They're the best defense in the country, and they have a real leader with real experience in Jamal Shedd. What's interesting about them is they had go through scoring lapses, and we saw it on Saturday. And that's really, really hard for you in March to win if you go through a lot of scoring lapses like that. Iowa State obviously has been dominant, and they've just done well at winning games, especially close ones. Obviously, besides that Baylor game, where Jaden Nunn had that game winner, Iowa State has done a really good job of finishing games well. But what's interesting to me is not a lot of experience there, and not a true leader. And once again, I think that's really important in March. And so to me, I don't consider them one of the top contenders to go far in the NCAA tournament. To me, it really is Houston, Baylor as well. I love Jakobi Walter, and I think what he brings to Baylor is a killer who is not afraid to take big time shots, not afraid to miss big time shots, and his confidence as it grows will just turn him into what they were really hoping they would get last year and just maybe didn't. And so I'm really interested to see what Baylor does down the stretch, especially if Yves Mecey doesn't have an inefficient game like he did yesterday. And then Kansas is super interesting as well because they do have two dudes who are All-American level players, but their depth and ability to guard at all five positions is pretty low. And that's pretty uncharacteristic of a Bill Self team. So to me, the two contenders to go deep in this tournament from the Big 12 are Baylor and U of H. And then I see, you know, a couple teams, including the ones I've mentioned, but also a Texas Tech to do really well in the tournament. And the last team, I think, which is kind of something that is an unpopular opinion, I think Texas has the dudes on their roster to absolutely make a run. 2 years ago, we saw them go through a really interesting season where it seemed like they were discombobulated during the season. It was the last year of Marcus or Timmy Allen, and Marcus Carr was in his first year with the program. And then once they got to the tournament, they had a really nice win and a really nice performance in the tournament because they just had dudes and they guard well. And I think that's the same of this team. Max A. Smith has been at the tournament many times. He's experienced. Dylan Dessou is unguardable. And when he's hot, he is unstoppable. And so I think Texas is kind of my dark horse here to make maybe a Sweet 16 or Elite Eight run, even though they've been, people have been pretty down on them. Teams like Oklahoma, BYU, I'm not super high on. Kansas State, Cincy, it'll be interesting if they get in. I kind of feel like Cincy is probably an NIT team, and Kansas State could potentially float in if they get some wins on the stretch. And then I won't talk about necessarily TCU specifically, but I do like TCU, obviously. So that's a lot. There's so much to say. This conference is huge. But those are kind of general thoughts when it comes to the conference.
Yeah. And for TCU specifically, obviously the last 2 years they've gotten to that round of 32 and have fallen just short kind of both times. And so this year I'm wondering, what is it that gets them to the next level? What needs to happen? And obviously this is a lot to do with, you know, who they play, the seeding, all that, but you know, what is it that's going to push this team into like the Sweet 16 for the first time in a long time, if that does happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the easiest thing answer is win three of these last four, win a Big 12 tournament game, and don't get on that 8-9 line again. Like, mm-hmm. you're just asking yeah. to have to play someone that is an impossible task. Like, Who wants to play Benedict Mathurin? Who wants to play Drew Timmy in the second round? Like, that's just an impossible task. And what's funny is that I think I said this on this podcast before, if Eddie Lampkin plays for TCU last year, I think TCU makes a Sweet 16 because someone can guard Drew Timmy. So what's cool is you don't want to continue to be that team who's just almost there anymore. Mm-hmm. And that requires sometimes work in the regular season. And TCU is doing it for the first time. They're putting in the work. TCU, I said this, like, they've never finished above 500 in Big 12 play. And so to do that, you give yourself an opportunity to be a six seed and get to play an 11 and then a three. And then, you know, even a two in the Sweet 16 instead of having to face that one. But then beyond that, and it's something they've shown that they can do this season, it's playing complete basketball, something that they did not do against Gonzaga last year was play complete basketball. We saw Mike Miles played super, super well, but other guys had tough nights and they were able to exploit that. And especially down low with Drew Timmy, and it just wasn't enough. And so what's interesting about TCU is they're much more well-rounded, and that is the key to making a big run. However, what I said in the fall with you guys still stands. They need someone who's leading offensively. And it hasn't been at the guard level, somewhere I trust for sure at this point. And then Emmanuel Miller is probably the best candidate, but still isn't always willing to, with conviction, get buckets on the regular. And so he's scoring well, especially when the game comes to him. But in March, like I said, typically you need great guard play, especially leadership at that level. So, yeah, I think TCU is the best poise they've ever been to make a Sweet 16. And I don't want to say this year is a failure if they don't, but it absolutely would not be a year of like, heck yes, we made the tournament and anything we do is a win, where it was 2 years ago and in some ways last year. This year, it was expected. and you earned it, and now go do something with it. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about Mike Miles, because I know you've had a chance to come close to them and cover him for so many years. He had an interesting quote today on Mickey Miles' podcast, you know, the new one started up, where he talked about his journey. And he said, if you're not first round, my advice definitely would be to go back. You would much rather enjoy that last year in college than be in the G League, which I thought was a super interesting quote based on his decision to go pro last year. What did you think of that decision? Because he was obviously one of the best players in college basketball. And how do you think it's fair for him? And also for TCU's sake, what would TCU's team look like this year if he had stayed?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I 2 years ago in 2022, I really thought that Mike was going to be done. And so I was surprised and excited when he decided to come back. And then this year, I knew he was going to go. He had just told me and made it clear that he was kind of done. And so I think it's easy to hear that and be like, well, Mike, you didn't do that last year. And I think he just felt like his time and legacy had been cemented at TCU. It was time for them to bring in some new dudes. Damian Ball was leaving. It was just one of those things where he just felt good about leaving. And I also think Mike, probably based on what he did at TCU, did deserve to get drafted. And so I think he thought that he, and in some ways people had told him, not that he would go in the first round, but he had first round level talent and would find that success. And so I think that's a Mike Miles who has had a couple months to kind of reflect on how this has gone. And I talked to him last fall, and he told me, man, the G League is not as hard as college basketball. Like, they don't guard you the same way they do in the Big 12. And so that's a really interesting thing. And something I read is that second round picks, only about a fifth of them stay in the league for very long. And so I think kind of his point there is, man, if you have the ability where there isn't things, there aren't things left on the table for you, or there still are things left on the table for you at the school you're at, like, do that and go back and keep cementing your legacy. Because if you're just chasing the bag in the NBA, the easiest way to say what he said today is G League life is not it. It just isn't. And unless you're gonna make your name in the NBA, like, spend time in college and enjoy it. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of what he meant by that. And to answer your question about if he stayed, it's interesting. Mike became a much better defender and learned, like, I think grew a lot while he's at TCU. But the ball was just in his hands a lot, and he did well with that. His user was high. But I think TCU's offense may not be quite as efficient and effective as it is this year, especially with a shooter like Trey, especially with an offense that gives E-Man a lot of touches and things like that. And so that is interesting. I'm not sure if it would be better or worse, but I do think just based on the way things ended up, it was good that Mike ended up leaving. And dude, I wish him the best, and really hopeful, as he's been growing in the G League, that he gets a chance with the Mavs or somewhere else. So.
Yeah. So we're kind of getting down here in the stretch. March is right around the corner. TCU has four regular season games left, and we're recording this on Monday, the 26th. We have Baylor tonight. You said, like, win three out of these four, win a tournament game. What do you think is going to happen with this team with the schedule? They get Baylor at home, BYU on the road, yeah, West Virginia on the road, UCF at home. How do you see them faring in those four games? And I guess, how do they take care of business in these last four games?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of it hinges on tonight. Mm-hmm. Whenever your seed kind of gets solidified, everything kind of goes out the window. And so those last two games at BYU and UCF, I believe, mm-hmm. BYU's first, and then West Virginia, UCF. But even West Virginia on the road, those games change in urgency for TCU based on where their seed is. So, like, in 2022, TCU went on the road against West Virginia right before the Big 12 tournament. West Virginia, besides Taz Sherman, was not good at all, and they lost because they didn't care. And so that'll be interesting. But say if TCU wins tonight, you get a chance for TCU to end up as high as a 5. If things crazy happen, as high as a 4. And that is really interesting. So I think tonight really hinges on that. I want to say they win tonight because I'm excited and I love TCU. In reality, I think TCU probably wins 2 of these next 4. I feel really good about an Emmanuel Miller, Micah Peavy, Jacoby Cole senior night, March 9th win. I know they've kind of celebrated them this week, but I feel good about that against UCF. The 2 road games, though, are up in the air. And like I said, I think it depends on today. The reason I said the 2 out of the 2 is just that would put you at above 500 on Big 12 play. And routinely, teams that do that have been higher than an 8 or a 9 seed and ended up in that 6-7 window. And so I think that, especially if you don't lose to an Oklahoma State or whoever in the Big 12 championship, the Big 12 tournament, I think that would at least give them a really good shot of getting out of that 8-9 line. And so that's really interesting. But yeah, what's cool is like, yeah, the verdict is not out on this team and the ceiling is not. And if you win tonight, very winnable game at home, you are putting an opportunity at TCU doing something they haven't done since the tournament was made out of like 16 teams. And that's be a 4 seed or around there. And so that'd be a huge ceiling, but it's possible, especially given that TCU's last 3 games are all super winnable. So,
Yeah, this has been awesome again. We love having you on, and time's kind of running out on us here, but one last question. Looking at a broader perspective of where TCU's at, they barring disaster, 3 straight years in the NCAA tournament for the first time ever.
yeah.
How have you seen the growth of this team in senior night? Like you said, like your Emmanuel Millers, your Micah Peavy, Jacoby, these core group of guys who have been here all these years. How have you seen them develop, and what has it meant for the program?
Yeah, dude. It's one of those things where TCU, after my freshman year, you saw just a massive exodus of transfers. And there were questions of like, what is Jamie Dixon like? Can he get people to commit? Can he get people to, be bought into his program? And there are a couple factors that I think really, even the year they went to the tournament, it was like the first time, 2022, or at least first time since 2017. There were questions of like, what is this? Is this an anomaly? Is Mike about to leave? What's going on? And so, one, getting Mike to stay for 3 years, when I'll tell you guys after his second year, he could have gone a lot of places in the country, decided to come back for a third year. Getting Emmanuel Miller to have been one of the leading scorers in the SEC to take a diminished role at TCU and then grow into who he is now. Getting Micah Peavy to stay as long as he has and really finally find the kind of pinnacle of his game. It's just one of those things where Jamie Dixon has proven that he can get guys to buy in, that they like playing for him, and that he can build continued success even without dudes that are NBA talent. And that is awesome. And I think it's really cool for the state of the program. It'll really help recruiting as you're going into a really awesome recruiting class for TCU in this next year. And I was told on Saturday that the guys on the bench right now that are redshirting, Jace Posey and why am I forgetting his the other name?
Isaiah Manning.
Isaiah Manning, yes, thank you. That they're bought in. They're excited. They've loved the season and they really want to be here, especially Jace. And so that's really hard to do in the basketball culture that we're in right now, and it's not easy. And it's something I'm interested to see if Bruce Pearl has done with Aiden Holloway at Auburn, and if he can get him to stay this offseason. And to get a guy to sit on the bench the whole year is not easy. And so yeah, Jamie Dixon has built a cool culture. It at some point does need to lead to more success in the tournament. So hoping that happens this year, but the trajectory is still up, and it's really been cool to see.
Well, that's all the time we have here, but you're the man. I mean, getting to meet you at Cincy this Saturday was awesome. Finally seeing you in person, and it means a lot to us having you on here, and recurring guest, friend of the pod. Another great time talking. So I just want to say thanks again.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. It's always great talking TC with you, and you're super generous to come back on and talk again.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for saying that. I really respect what you guys are doing. I love it. I love the coverage, and I'm just a dude who loves Big 12 hoops, bro. So I'm thankful to get to spend time with y'all and don't feel like anything special and love getting to talk about it. So yeah, hope the game goes well tonight, Nick, and enjoy that
Yeah.
environment, bro. It's gonna be
Yeah.
crazy. So
It's it should be it reminds me of like I think it was 2 years ago today where that first tech rush, you know, that type of
crazy.
environment. It's one of those days on campus today. So I'm stoked for it and hopefully we can pull out the win.
Yeah.
Good. Love it, boys. Well, dude, thanks for having me on. Hope y'all are doing well, and let me know if you ever need anything, and appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you so
Definitely. Thanks
much.
again. Have a good one.